This is The After Party, live with Kim McAllister and John Daly.
Well, happy Monday, Kim.
Happy Monday to you. Looking
good. Sorry for the delay,
there.
Everybody. We still had some live Eagle cam footage that was being loaded.
We're checking in on our Eagles. We have to make sure they're doing okay up there. You know,
but we want to say hello to everybody. We have somebody new in the chat, Thomas D. Welcome. Thomas is asking what this channel is about. So maybe Kim, you could, I think you'd be best to explain what this channel
is about. Right. So this is a channel that is about, you know, we've covered the news, we covered the Supreme Court, we covered politics, and then we get to the after party where sometimes we can discuss what happened on the other shows. And most of the time, we're interested in stories that maybe we haven't talked about yet. We're looking at things that are interesting scientifically or interesting in a wacky way, kind of odd news way. We're looking at stories, fun stories with animals, maybe feel good stories. So it's a little bit different flavor is what we have.
Yeah. And sometimes our live audience, my cat, will try to do something inappropriate and I have to throw him out of the room.
Oh, no.
Anyway, so we want to start out by thanking everybody for joining us. We have this crazy story. Oh, you want to look at the cam now?
Well, I wasn't going to. I'll take it off for a minute.
Okay. Our lead story is about a mushroom frog. What is a mushroom frog?
Oh, for some reason, it's not leaving the story. There it is. And I can hear it echo.
Because you still have your work screen on.
No, I don't.
Let me remove it. Yeah, there it was.
I don't know. Okay, so yeah, let's talk about this frog. This is a really weird situation. This frog has a mushroom growing out of its flank on its side. You can see that little white thing sticking out there.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? As a matter of fact, researchers have never seen anything like it. this little guy, he's got this mushroom growing out of his side. Researchers found him by the side of the road in India, where I guess there's a little pond with these tiny little frogs that were all jumping around. And they spotted this growing out of him, took a picture of it, but they didn't capture him so that they could, you know, dissect him or study it further. But they say it's the first documented case of this type of thing happening that they know of. One of the researchers say, when I observed this frog with the mushroom, I was amazed and intrigued by the sight. He was part of this group with World Wildlife Fund in India that saw the frog. He said, my thought was to document it as this phenomenon is something we've never heard of. We just wanted this to be a rare incident and not something of a dangerous phenomenon for this frog specifically. It looks like they say this frog was seemingly healthy, that there was nothing wrong with it. But
right, but I mean, it's
weird.
It's like a fungal infection, right?
They don't know.
I mean, it's growing
like how
out of
extensive
the frog,
it
so.
Is, right? They say they watched this frog move from the center of the twig it sat upon to the very tip, turning around, changing positions, and that mushroom remained perfectly in place the whole time. They didn't touch the frog. They didn't collect it. So neither the cause of this phenomenon nor the fate of the frog is known. But what they say is this mushroom, upon further inspection, is a common bonnet. It's part of the Mycetia genus, a type of fungi that grows mostly on rotting wood from dead trees. It is a mushroom that typically gets its nutrients from dead or decaying organic matter. But in 2023, a study was done showing that this mushroom could evolve to thrive on living plants as well. Living creatures? I don't know. I guess so. They suggest in this study done last year that Mycetia fungus could develop to have a symbiotic relationship with living plants or trees, meaning both the plant and the fungus growing on it would benefit from the arrangement, that the fungi would take both the nutrients from and transfer them to the plant host. Okay. The prognosis of the frog with the mushroom hitchhiker, we don't know. But there are a lot of theories about what could have caused this to happen. You know, they go on, they can't prove anything. But it makes, you know what it makes me think of? the last that show, The Last of Us, it's this whole fungal infection with people, and I'm like, if it started in the frog, and then it spread to the humans.
I was just thinking of lichen, you know, lichen? Algae and fungus living off each other. But yeah, I mean that happens throughout nature and in other ways. You know, not necessarily mushrooms.
Some scientists are calling this a big concern for the frog species.
and you said it was a tiny frog, so I mean it's fascinating that they were able to spot that.
I guess if you're a naturalist and you're used to, you know, looking at things and taking close-up pictures of things, you would spot this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of looking at things up close, robo-taxis. Did you see the story?
Yeah.
This is out of Los Angeles. A man faces a charge of attempted grand theft auto after police say he tried to steal a driverless car in LA, only to find out.
Is that not the dumbest thing you could ever do? It's all, they have sensors all over it. They know exactly where it is.
Yep. Only he found out that he couldn't work the controls. The attempted, because they do have a steering, it does have a steering wheel. And if you are an authorized employee, they can, you know, when they were training these vehicles, they had people behind the wheels, right? But you have to, it has to be allowed, right, by the system. The attempted theft occurred around 10:30 on Saturday night. Authorities say 33-year-old Vincent Maurice Jones hopped into a Waymo Jaguar sedan that had just dropped off another passenger on Main Street just north of First in downtown L.A. You know where that is.
Oh, yeah.
There actually is a Whole Foods there. Officers say Jones got into the driver's seat and tried to manipulate the system to put the vehicle into drive, but couldn't manipulate the controls. A Waymo employee spoke with Jones through the car's communication system and instructed him to leave the vehicle. Jones did not follow instructions, and the L.A. Police Department were called. Officers arrived a short time later and placed Jones under arrest. Waymo recently received approval from the CPUC to operate its fleet of autonomous passenger taxis in Los Angeles County. And didn't you just say, I think you reported that they're now allowed in on the peninsula?
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, the Waymo has been given permission by Los Angeles County and San Francisco County to increase the number of them.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so that's excellent.
Try not to get run over, everyone.
Trevor says the car called the cops.
I'm sorry, I can't do that.
That's nuts. Just nuts. If you could please click the like button, we would really appreciate it. And if you happen to be listening on podcast or you like the show, if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you get your podcasts on, that will really help us out and bump up the show's visibility so we can grow it.
Like a mushroom?
Like a mushroom on the side of a frog, baby. That's
now
right.
This is a bit of deja vu. You remember a year ago there was the Chinese spy balloon?
Yeah.
What's this, Kim?
Uh-oh. Is that another spy balloon? What is that? Looks like a parachute. Like a
large balloon discovered by fishermen off the coast of Alaska. Yep. Okay. Here we go again. This is a group of commercial fishermen. They were en route to deliver an object discovered off of the coast of Alaska to the FBI. The outlet, citing three sources, says that the object, which intelligence experts suspect could be a spy balloon, is expected to be analyzed at Quantico, the FBI lab made famous by the X-Files, after the ship reaches port sometime this weekend. Although it's yet to be determined exactly what the fishermen found, the FBI believed after viewing photographs of the object that it was similar enough to past surveillance balloons to warrant further investigation. The FBI spokesperson said that they are aware of debris found off the coast of Alaska by a commercial fishing vessel and will assist with the logistics of the debris recovery. February 24th, a hobbyist balloon had defense officials on alert after it was spotted over the western U.S., according to CBS. Before the balloon was identified, CBS noted some military officials suspected it could be a surveillance device. So I was reading about this. It's like the Chinese are doing this because it's a lot cheaper than launching satellites.
Is this weird, though? What do they want to see? What are they looking for?
Well, I mean, it's espionage. It happens every day, Kim. I mean, we're being watched. Russia, I just saw a story that Russia intercepted, or hackers intercepted a WebEx video call involving military operatives in Germany talking about how the British are using missiles and are on the ground in Ukraine. Do you see the story?
No.
And now Russia, of course, is releasing that through RT, their that media channel that's run by his best friend. Mm-hmm. And they're basically trying to change the narrative, right? They want people to stop talking about Alexei Navalny and look over here. The British are on the ground helping Ukraine and are escalating this war. And Putin says that there's a Western collective that's working against Russia. So, I mean, why are there spy satellites? For exactly this purpose, you know, for espionage. And it's going on every day. We just do it with very high-tech satellites overhead.
It seems like China would have access to high-tech satellites as well, that they wouldn't need to resort to
they're
balloons,
just saying it's
which are so
it's cheaper,
obviously.
And they're active all over the world, so, you know.
Wow. And it's so weird because what they're flying over, what are you looking for here? I mean, I don't know, unless there's some secret military installation somewhere.
Well, like a lot of these balloons, they're following, you know, they follow the jet stream, right?
So, right.
Or they use the jet stream to get to certain places. Like the one that came over Alaska last time, it went down through Canada and then over Montana and then over missile silos. So,
right.
You know, they follow these arcs, these curves, these flight plans. But anyway... Yep, here we go again.
Great, they're coming
balloon.
To get us. That's fantastic. Lovely. We're going to lighten it up with some piggies.
Oh, piggies?
Yeah.
Look at this guy.
Oh, loose piggies.
Aww.
He doesn't look too happy. Is he tired or dead?
That's a good question. I think he's just being kind of examined here.
Okay.
But loose pigs, this loose pig lit up social media and it was found in... sorry, let me start all over again.
No, it's okay.
It lit up social media in two North Carolina towns. You can see why. Check out this photo. This is an escaped pig that became an unlikely internet celebrity when residents of two North Carolina towns spotted them wandering through their yards. The pig was first spotted Wednesday.
There's a pig in the yard. What?
It was on Falconwood Drive, where you know that. You know where that is in Wendell. And social media lit up. Photos all over the place. Look at this. The paparazzi showed up. He sees them. Wake County Animal Control said the officers were able to take the social media swine into custody, after it made its way down south of this area. The male pig, nicknamed Thanos by rescuers, was taken to the Wake County Animal Center on a stray hold. Officials said they are now trying to find the pig's owner, and state law requires them to auction the animal if no one comes forward to claim him.
Aww.
So I think he's just
getting checked out. Yeah.
He's getting checked out, but he passed out here.
This happened in the Bay Area. No one has ever heard of such a thing before, right? This elephant seal has done something that no one has seen this type of behavior from this species before. This happened at Point Reyes National Seashore. That's pretty good. I like it. Yeah. So the elephant seals visit Point Reyes beaches several times a year. And they come for mating and pupping season, etc., right?
No.
I remember I actually went to Año Nuevo to see the elephant seals. The big walk, and you go with a park ranger, and they say, you're going to see some baby elephant seals that are left alone and dying in the sand. You're going to want to pick them up and help them, but don't. This is nature. This is the way it is. They've been abandoned for whatever reason, and you're not to step in and help. Okay. So it's like... wild world of animals, right? When you go to see this. And so these bull elephant seals that weigh as much as 5,500 pounds are really focused on just the mating. They've got to fight off other dominant males to see who gets to mate with the females, right? And that's what they do. This is the first time that one of them has ever been seen doing something kind for someone else. In this case, this elephant seal, the baby seal got caught in the surf. They were trying to cool off and it was floating out. And the mother seal was on the shore barking wildly, like, someone help, my baby's leaving, whatever.
Right.
For whatever reason, she couldn't jump in and do this. So this big bull elephant seal, which normally doesn't get involved in anything to do once the pups are born, jumps into the water and corrals it with his nose and pushes it back up onto shore and basically saves this baby elephant seal pup.
No, that's cool.
And they've never seen this happen before. And the researcher said when they saw it, we knew how unusual it was. He was a biological science tech that happened to be out at Point Reyes. They said, we know it's rare, so we thought we should publish this right away and get it out to the academic arena so everyone knows about it. They were out there because they were counting the number of males and females and pups. And they say there's this female and her about 2-week-old pup that were about 30 to 50 feet from the group and close to the water, trying to cool off. And that is when this whole situation went down, where the pup was pulled out to into the water. They said it's an unusual act of altruism where this bull elephant seal saved a drowning pup. Yeah. Afterward, the female bellowed in a voice usually directed toward males. And within seconds, the male trumpeted and then just lay down and rested on the sand.
Oh, that's
really
good.
Interesting.
That's cool. Working together. Yeah. I wish humans would do this more often.
Oh, wouldn't that be nice? No, they do. Oh, bunnies. Look at the bunnies.
Probably not as often as animals do. Mm-hmm. Over 100 rabbits taken from California backyard hoarding situation.
Whatever. And the number, 100 bunnies?
And the number could grow. The Bunny World Foundation estimated that because of their 28-day gestation period, the number of rabbits in the incident could grow to more than 300. Here's another photo. Look at this.
Happy Easter.
A few months ago, Joe Torcello noticed a rabbit in the alley next to his house. Torcello said that he waved to the rabbit and passed by it the next day, but it was gone. He said it continued like that for months, with the rabbit showing up off, on and off, sneaking through his fence. Then he noticed a bunny when he was cleaning the backyard. A few days later, a skunk appeared in his garage before a rabbit jumped on it, and the two animals started to play together. I'm not sure they were playing. like the cartoons. A couple of days after that, a completely different rabbit was in his backyard. It was just getting weirder and weirder before he realized the rabbits had procreated very quickly over a few months. Over 100 rabbits were taken from his Southern California backyard in what the Bunny World Foundation, or BWF, in case you're wondering, it does exist, has called a hoarding situation that unraveled last week. On February 20th, the Los Angeles Animal Services Department reached out to BWF seeking help rescuing a large number of rabbits that were found in the backyard of a home in the Granada Hills neighborhood of Los Angeles. According to a news release shared by the BWF, Torcello said that it took a few months for him to finally call for help with his rabbit problem. Seeing a bunch of bunnies bolting at me from under his tortoise's burrow in the backyard prompted the call. He said he tried to block the bunnies in so that they weren't running around in the alley before help could come. But when they arrived at the scene on Saturday, the team found a massive backyard rabbit hoarding disaster with babies, nursing mothers, juveniles, and adult rabbits running across several yards, exposed to the elements and unprotected from predators. Isn't that insane?
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know bunnies. Well, I guess they say mating like rabbits, right? There's a reason why that's an expression.
Mm. Yeah, a lot of bunnies. Oh, let's check in on our, I'm so excited about this story. Let's check in on our bald eagle nest, because they're cute.
This is something we talked about last week.
Yeah, this is a bald eagle couple. They have 3 eggs in their nest, and there's a camera now. We've been watching these bald eagles. They're waiting for them to pip, which is when the beak of the eaglet pokes through the egg.
Okay.
And so we're waiting for the
pipping. Kind of like the opposite of when you're trying to break an egg to make an omelet.
That's right.
And coming so from the other, they're coming from the other side.
Someone managed to climb up and put a live cam in a nearby tree, or maybe it's the same tree, I don't know. So we've been watching this live stream of what's happening in the nest. And over the weekend, there was really no pipping and no movement. Although I did see last night, I was watching the eagle live cam, and I saw that it was rainy and windy, and the dad eagle had moved some of the sticks to better protect the eggs. So that was a cool display of the dad trying to protect them as well. And then the mother flew back into the nest, and he looked at her, and then he flew off. Like, they're doing it in shifts. Pretty cool. So there's one of them. I don't know if that's the male or female, still laying on the eggs, and we're still waiting. Still waiting.
Such a majestic bird.
It
obviously
really is.
It's our national
symbol. I mean, just look at
symbol.
That view. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Whoever put that camera up there, thank you.
Yeah, I think it's the Friends of Bear Valley. It's an organization.
I was really worried. It was so stormy and rainy. But the one of the eagles, whichever one was on the nest at the time, just tucked their head down under their wing and rode it out.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that the fathers are stepping up in all these situations.
Isn't that nice to see?
Yeah. Meanwhile, in Las Vegas, or I'm sorry, not Las Vegas, New Zealand, almost the same thing, but kind of different. Same, but different. Las Vegas is different. This is New Zealand here. Check this out. A leap year glitch shuts down gas pumps across New Zealand. So you can see the sign here says nationwide payment outage, site unavailable.
Oh, no.
Dozens of unattended gas pumps across New Zealand were out of service for several hours due to a leap year related software issues. Does that remind you of something?
Yeah.
The year 2000, Y2K. Mm-hmm. Gas station chains including Allied Petroleum, Gull, Z, and Watsitamo, you're familiar with those, right? Reported that they could not process card payments on Thursday because their computer systems were not programmed to accept the February 29th date as a valid date. Motorists have been turning up and unable to get fuel. It's been incredibly frustrating for our customers, they said. Lay said that Gull stations, as well as all New Zealand gas stations with unattended pumps, use technology provider Invenco. This goes to show that you shouldn't rely on one provider.
No.
And when you have a system that's critical, right?
I mean,
you should have multiple providers.
Running out of gas on the side of the road all over New Zealand or what?
Well, I mean, it was only the automated, unattended pumps, so you could find another gas station, but I'm sure it causes difficulty in probably in outlying areas. A lot of New Zealand is rural, so they probably have a lot of gas stations without attendants. But anyway, that's pretty crazy, right? You think they would have anticipated that. That's that's a programmer error. Anyway, I thought that was interesting.
No, that's interesting. All right, let's move to this. If you smoke weed, it's bad for you, apparently.
If you stay at home and get baked.
It's as bad as smoking cigarettes. That, according to this new study, they say smoking cannabis regularly can, in some cases, be as bad for you as smoking cigarettes. It shows how regular smoking of marijuana is linked to an increased risk of heart attack and stroke. So, this study looked at 500,000 cannabis users, and nearly 75% of them surveyed consumed cannabis by smoking it. The other 25% vaped it, drank it, or ate it. And they say it's a very interesting and timely study with more people using cannabis. This is out of the Stanford University Cardiovascular Institute. The study looked at how toxins released into the body when cannabis is burned are similar to tobacco smoking. They said it's a twofer. If you smoke, you get the particulate matter and the ingredient THC, which is also detrimental to cardiovascular health. So edibles are also not healthy because they have THC. Well, then what are you going to do? I don't know.
They're saying THC has a negative impact on cardiovascular health.
It says, so edibles are also not healthy because they have THC. Most people, according to the researchers, say it's legal, it's safe, but that's not true. Many products are legal, like tobacco smoke, and they can kill you by using them.
Yeah, I understand, but I've never heard that THC causes cardiovascular damage, so I need to look into this.
Yeah, I think
For a
friend. Maybe we need to do a little bit more study, because daily cannabis smoking, they say, can lead to a 42% increase in the risk of stroke, 25% increase in the risk of heart attack. This study examined how frequent use of cannabis relates to cardiovascular disease. If you are interested in reading it or looking into it further, you'll find it in the Journal of the American Heart Association, and it was backed by the National Institutes of Health as well.
Well, Steve Becker says, that's it. I'm sticking with alcohol.
That's it. Health experts are calling this study a wake-up call, saying it sheds important light on this subject because use of cannabis is on the rise among all age brackets, especially younger people. So it's
Deidre's asking about edibles.
Into.
You did include that in the list, right?
That's what they say. One of the researchers are saying edibles are not healthy.
Because you said it was the THC that has a negative impact on cardiovascular.
Yeah,
that's why I've never heard this.
But the study mostly
Nothing in our history.
The study mostly focuses on smoking of it
and
the chemicals that, you know, are released when you smoke.
Right.
So I think that's where their big focus is in this study.
Right. But I'm going to have to do some more research, if you know what I mean.
I agree.
And share that with Mark. Okay. Are you familiar with the firefall in Yosemite?
It. Mm-hmm. I've never seen it with my own eyes. Only pictures.
Oh really? Well, have you seen video of it?
No. Yeah. A little bit, I think.
Well,
but I want to see it again.
Out.
Show it to me.
Oh. Yeah, so check this out. First, we have a daytime shot. Visitors to Yosemite National Park in California were treated to a rare phenomenon where the reflection of the sun on the falling water creates what's known as a firefall. This is Yosemite's Horsetail Fall, and in a moment here, you'll see it when it's darker out. It's pretty cool. Here we go. It only happens a few times each
February
when the reflection of the setting sun makes the falling water look like flowing flames. It's rare to be able to get a glimpse of this, as the waterfall is often shaded by clouds. So this video was captured during a recent visit to the park and posted to Jay Huang's YouTube channel. This is the first time to capture the complete firefall effects in the last 30 minutes of sunset without any obstruction from clouds, even though I had photographed the firefall multiple times over the last dozen years, according to Huang. So you can see, like, this is not something that it's easy to see, and it doesn't happen very often, and it's been hard to document it. So that's pretty cool.
It's a beautiful phenomenon, really. And people go there just to take pictures of it. It's so pretty.
What's up next?
Can you hear me? Florida homeowners are desperately trying to move out. Wait a minute. Didn't you just leave California to head to Florida? Oh, well, wait a minute. Florida has the highest number of motivated sellers listing their properties on real estate marketplace app Zillow. A search showed that as of Wednesday, there were almost 5,000 listings on Zillow's app for Florida properties whose sellers describe themselves as motivated, meaning they would accept lower offers for potential home buyers to sell quickly. The motivated sellers can be driven by financial loss, divorce, separation, job relocation, or other personal issues. The vacation rental investors are even noticing this increase in motivated sellers in Florida, wondering what's going on. Some comparing Florida's numbers to those in California, New York, and Texas, which apparently all had lower figures. So those listed as motivated by state: New York, 424, California, 1,066 sellers, Texas, 1,770 sellers, compared to New York's 4,925 motivated sellers. So that's a lot more listings for Florida of people ready to just check out.
And Spencer makes a good point.
Not enough Whole Foods in Florida.
Yeah.
I don't know where they're going, if they're going to different states or different cities or what, but I guess Florida has more listings in general than the rest of the United States because they
have. And Thomas also making a good point. A lot of Florida will be undersea.
Yeah, that's true.
It's coming.
Yeah.
Probably not the good place to invest on the coast there.
Yeah, so Florida, a lot of people want to check out of you. Not a surprise.
You could check in, go on safari, check out the locals, and then head out from your safari. But it's not just Florida. Forget the California exodus. New Jersey residents have led an influx back to the Golden State. After a half decade of Californians moving to places like Texas and Florida, not Kim McAllister for some reason, an unlikely state has been supplying California with new residents. New Jersey, similarly expensive and densely populated state, saw more residents move to California than the other way around in 2022, a rarity amid the state's population exodus. It was one of only 8 states to be part of the reverse exodus phenomenon, and the state with the largest net number of transplants to California. Among those moving from the Golden State to the, or I'm sorry, from the Garden State, not to be confused with the Golden State, which I just said, was Corey Samad. She's 26 and made the move from South Orange, New Jersey to Los Angeles in 2021 to pursue an art career with $1,200 in her pocket. I didn't have a job or anything. I just tried to figure it out. Jobs included serving at Dave and Buster's, working at strip clubs, making money to try to survive. After 9 months in Los Angeles, Samad moved in with a cousin in Hayward since then. She's been working and performing, primarily rapping at gay bars up and down the West Coast. I had 25 shows in 1 year. So this is an interesting profile, but this person says that they miss the vibe of people in New Jersey, but thinks that people move faster because of the cold, which you would expect, right?
Oh,
because of the weather.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why, you know, people say California's expensive. I'm like, yeah, for a reason. People want to be here, right? For almost 40 million people. There's a reason why people want to live here. So yes, it's going to be more expensive. And when you have that many people, you're going to have more social problems, right? So unfortunately, and the larger a system becomes, like a government, right? The more corrupt it becomes and the more inefficient it becomes. So, you know, there's a plus and a negative, right? There's a pro and a con to everything.
Yeah, interesting. It's interesting that they're headed back. You know, whoopsies, we regret it. Little bit of winter, that's all it took. One winter and you're headed back to California.
I know a lot of people move to Chicago and they're like, oh, I love Chicago, blah, blah, blah. And then like November comes and then you see the Facebook updates like, Oh my God, it's so cold. So cold. And two of them have moved back.
Speaking of places you might want to go, according to a recent study led by the University of Utah geographers,
where are we going?
The best place to see a UFO has been confirmed to be the American West. So this is a study about the best places to see a UFO. All right. And maybe you're interested in looking into the night sky and having your chances increased of you seeing something a little bit hinky up there. The data came from the National UFO Research Center. The University of Utah geographers looked at the influence of environmental factors and whether they increase or decrease the number of reported sightings of UFOs, which are now called, in addition to UFOs, UAPs, unidentified anomalous phenomena. Most sightings, they said, occurred in the American West, where proximity to public lands, dark skies, and military installations afford more opportunities to see the strange objects in the air.
Here we go.
Look at the people and the bikes coming out. Look at that.
We've got a ship sucking up people and the bicycles.
One of the authors of the study says, their hypothesis is that if you have a better view of the sky, you're going to see more things. Right? He said, it sounds like an obvious conclusion, but it hasn't been done in academic research before. You have to start somewhere. As scientists, he said, we start with a basic question and we build on this research. So the U.S. Department of Defense has increasingly taken UAP/UFO, formerly known as UFOs, as a serious threat to national security. It's a press release after a whistleblower spoke to the House Oversight Committee in 2023. But researchers said, they realize there's an opportunity to study these reported sightings and figure this whole thing out, that it was good timing that it came out. Their study came out right about the same time as the whole UFO
thing. Well, you know,
UFO
they should really collaborate with the Stanford study people, and because I'm sure there's THC involved here as well.
Maybe. It could be.
Yeah, for your best viewing experience, probably take an edible first.
They had 98,000 total sighting reports between 2001 and 2020. So 98,000 reports of unexplained phenomena in the sky over 19 years. And with those reports, they examined the sky view potential, how much light pollution is in the area for each county, right? They looked at cloud cover and tree canopy cover. How close are you to an airport or a military installation? All of these things. And what they found is, desert areas where there's open sky and people looking up in the sky, that people tend to see more things there. There are a ton of sightings in Washington, around Seattle, around Los Angeles, and San Francisco. It seems like that whole western U.S. portion has more sightings.
When I was driving back from Texas in 2009, I went through, and just it happened to be the timing of, I was trying to get home as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. I ended up driving through Roswell, New Mexico around 3 a.m. in the morning. And I'm not going to lie, of course, I'd watch the X-Files, a little
Did
paranoid.
Did you see anything weird?
There were flashes of light off in the distance. Now, I mean, obviously that's not a UFO.
Look at you.
But it wasn't lightning. And I'll be honest with you, I was a little creeped out, a little freaked out. I just kept driving.
They don't know if all of these sightings are actual UFOs or not.
No, it's probably China.
They don't know.
Top secret military. My bets are number one.
Spy balloons.
Top secret military testing of aircraft and then number two, spy balloons and things like that. I mean, who knows? But it should be investigated regardless. You know what else should be investigated?
What?
Why we haven't taken a break yet.
Oh, let's take a break. It's a 28-second break. And when we come back, we'll talk about Sin City. Maybe not the Sin City you think. That's next on The After Party Live.
The After Party Live is underwritten by our audience, and without you, this show wouldn't be possible. If you can contribute $10, $15, or $20 a month, it would keep this party a-rockin'. The PayPal link can be found in the About section of the YouTube channel or at the bottom of the show description. Any dollar amount is appreciated, and it all adds up. On behalf of Kim and myself, thank you for your consideration.
Aloha, bitches. It's the After Party Live.
Yeah.
Now, we have been remiss. Wes was right on time with his contribution at the beginning of the show, and we forgot to thank him. So Wes, we need to thank Wes for a $5 super sticker. You help us almost every day. Every day you're here. And we appreciate that.
Wes,
and we appreciate
thank
all
you
help.
For that.
Thank you, Wes.
You're awesome, Wes. We love you. And we have to... I'm trying to find the list of people to thank, and I don't see it. Oh, no.
I have it. Joyce M.
Thank
Janet
you.
R. Nancy V. Jim S. Donald S. Vincent V. And Ricky F. Thank you, guys. Your ongoing regular contributions through PayPal make this show a possibility as we try to grow it and make it sustainable.
Thank you to
You know
all
what else
you.
Is sustainable?
A floating boat of sex and secrets and lies.
Sin is sustainable.
That's right. Thank you, Satan.
That's right. This story is about sin, and let's check this out. This is not exactly what you're probably expecting, but a former lawyer who spent 6 years living on the world's most exclusive invite-only cruise ship has revealed the secrets of the boat. His bombshell claims paint a fascinating picture of the vessel named, quote, the world, where passengers are caught in fiery clashes and affairs. Dun, dun, dun.
Well, I mean, you would think it would be like regular life, you know? You're on a boat for years with these people.
Depends on who's on the boat, Kim.
Well, I'm just saying, there's a lot of people on that boat. That means there's, you know, opportunity to live life and
meet
new people.
Right, but this is elite. These are the elites, Kim. Oh. These are the elites. This ex-commercial litigator, he's 64 years old from New York, compared the massive 644 12-deck residential ship to a frat house. The world... That's the name of the boat again. The world was launched in 2002, rather, promising passengers a lifestyle of residential luxury adventure that was previously unimaginable. And check out, these are what the apartments, they call them apartments.
Oh,
this is what the apartments look
nice.
Like. These are 165 super luxurious apartments, from stylish studios to three-bedroom apartments. The ship travels to more than 100 destinations every year and is shrouded in mystery. Its condos reportedly cost between $2 million U.S. and $15 million. Each.
It has a fireplace.
I don't think
that's your own personal living room?
I'm guessing that's either digital or that's probably gas.
Oh, wow.
Probably gas, if it is real. So it costs between $2 million and $15 million for the condos. That excludes the annual ownership fees, and you must be invited by a resident and seconded by another to buy. So it kind of operates like a, what do they call those in New York? Those condo buildings where... you have like
co-ops.
Yeah, you have like a board and they have to approve you. An individual net worth of at least $10 million is reportedly compulsory for residents. So I'm out.
Murphy says it's not a boat if it has lifeboats. She likes to be called a ship, as one of my former captains would say.
Yeah. Ex-passenger Peter and his wife Tammy bought their first condo on the cruise ship for about $1.6 million in 2014. After enjoying a taster voyage where they came to love the boat's crew and routine, they switched suites multiple times throughout the residency before leaving in 2019, quote, sick of the gossip and the rumors and the cattiness and have been seen the world, having seen the world a few times over. Peter, who serves on the board of directors for the world, has now revealed what really happens on the world's most elite cruise ship. He told the Daily Mail, all the extreme conduct violations are brought to the board's attention, so that's what it comes down to. I knew where all the skeletons could be found. I knew who was sleeping with who assaulted whom, who stole.
Wow.
And beyond that, obviously, I have two eyes and two ears. You see things and you figure things out.
Pauline says it's like the villages at sea.
Exactly. Peter said the dramas and stories and subplots of the ship developed over the months and years. He explained, as residents, we salaciously sat and watched them brewing. A lot of people on the ship were entranced by the gossip, right? You can't get away from these people.
Wow.
The ship was powered by, this is what they said, the ship was powered more by rumors than diesel fuel. There were parties every day on board the ship, he claimed, with a lot of what he witnessed as somewhat analogous to a frat house. Former lawyer added, here you have a small group of very successful, entitled, I think that's the key word, entitled people floating around in a steel basin in the middle of the ocean. When you're at sea for 6 or 7 days, people go from bar to bar, and what could possibly go wrong? Did you have people getting smashed? Of course. Did you have people diving into the pool fully dressed? Yes. Did they stay fully dressed? Not always.
Oh, my.
Did you have people doing drugs? Of course you did. Anytime you have a group of people, you're going to have that stuff. So it was similar to what people have witnessed on HBO's dark comedy, The White Lotus.
Oh, Peter said, crazy.
With entitled owners screaming at staff, inappropriate, barely dressed guests grinding against each other on the pool deck.
Oh, this is wild.
Further alleged, guests would engage in heated arguments, throw punches, and spend years entangled in affairs, sometimes with members of the crew, reprimanding people who are paying $5 million for a condo and $500,000 a year in maintenance fees was a difficult task. But Peter said that there were protocols, processes, protocols, and standards for dealing with troublemakers. So I thought that was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, must be nice. Or maybe not nice.
God, let me off that ship.
I don't think I would, even if I had $10 million, no. No. No.
Luis
no,
says,
no.
Where's Archie? Has he ceased and desisted you guys over greater royalties and more tuna?
Well, you know, we figure we put the breaks in rotation. So there's three of them. And so we try not to overexpose Archie, because if he hits us every day, you know, it may become less effective.
Wes wants to know if there were kids on board that ship. It doesn't look
there's
like
no
it.
Mention of kids. I doubt it. From what I'm reading,
sex, drugs, and rock and roll romps. It doesn't seem like it.
Not appropriate place for kids.
No, thank you.
Not appropriate place for adults either.
Let's do some entertainment news, because okay. Did you hear this woman? She's a fashionista, and she became a social media star really in her 80s and 90s. Her name is Iris Apfel, and she just died at age 102. She was known for her quirky outfits and her unique looks. She's a style icon. She died at 102 in her home in Palm Beach, Florida.
102? Wow.
102 years old. The assumption is that she died of natural causes because of old age, but they haven't released an official cause yet.
Okay.
She became...
That could also be the weather. Like, she died because it was 102.
No, she was 102. Yeah. She's a socialite from New York. She became a fashion icon in her 80s and 90s. She called herself a geriatric starlet. And she was a mix. She liked to wear the haute couture, the vintage hippie looks, the bohemian styles, the bright colors. And she made a real name for herself on the fashion stage.
But you know who I was confusing her with when I saw this? Because I'm not in the fashion world, obviously. I'm wearing a hoodie. Carrie Donovan. Do you know who Carrie Donovan was?
No.
She was the fashion editor for Vogue, and she was the eclectic woman in the Old Navy commercials, and she had similar glasses, right?
Sure.
She would like hold her glasses in their big round glasses. So I thought that was the lady from the Old Navy commercials, but no, this is someone else.
She had a bunch of jobs before she became a worldwide internet sensation. She was a professor, a brand ambassador, an interior designer, a textile guru. She had done White House restoration work for 9 presidents in her lifetime. So she worked a lot.
And then finally, in
her retirement years, in her 80s and 90s, she became this social media phenomenon, this older woman who just had this incredible sense of style, you know, wearing things that I could never wear that. And look at her pulling it off like a champion.
Yeah, that's my favorite photo. She kind of looks like a Technicolor like pigeon.
It's cool. She was cool. Yeah.
Or chicken.
102 cool. years old. Yeah.
What a nice long life. Very
wonderful.
Cool.
And with so many different chapters to her story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Since we need to keep the show moving, this story is about AI. Are you aware of that movie called Roadhouse?
Yeah. With Patrick Swayze.
Yeah. Is it a movie or a TV show, actually?
It was a movie with a Patrick Swayze movie.
So it's a reboot. Yeah. I'm not sure the reboot is a movie or not relevant. So the original Roadhouse writer sues Amazon, alleging that the streamer is using artificial intelligence to replicate the actors' voices. Oh, here it comes. R. Lance Hill, the screenwriter of the original 1989 film that you're familiar with, Roadhouse, has filed a lawsuit against MGM Studios and its parent company, Amazon Studios, for copyright infringement. In the filing obtained by Variety, Hill claims Amazon ignored his ability to reclaim the rights for his 1986 screenplay as they mounted a remake starring Jake Gyllenhaal. It's on Prime Video, so it is being streamed. Hill's lawsuit alleges that he filed a petition with the U.S. Copyright Office in 2021 requesting that the copyright return to him after United Artists' claim was set to expire in 2023. The suit goes on to allege that Amazon ignored his claims and proceeded with the film using artificial intelligence to replicate the voices of actors for ADR. ADR is when they drop, they replace dialogue with something that's recorded, right?
Oh, okay.
Mark Thompson does a lot of that. Like, you go back later and they add, like, they didn't get the line right, so they drop it in.
Right.
Automated dialogue replacement. So this was during the SAG strike. So they're saying they used artificial intelligence during the strike, which is a big no-no. This is not the first time that the AI accusation has been floated. When producer Joel Silver was fired from Amazon in 2023 over verbal abuse, sources told Variety that the producer was actually being penalized for raising concerns over the streamer's use of AI to complete this Roadhouse reboot. So Amazon is strongly denying the allegation. But here's another case of AI being allegedly used in a bad way.
Can I do a little breaking news? Is that acceptable to you?
You can, but first...
After Party Live, breaking news.
A real doozy, and I don't know how serious it is, but the FBI is putting out this warning about an assassin who is apparently after Trump allies. This is just crazy. So here's the picture that appears on Newsweek of the story of this assassin. You can see the guy in the circle, right?
Oh, I thought the other guy was the assassin for a second.
No, he's just assassinating democracy. The other guy, well, that's a problem. The FBI in Miami is warning of an Iranian assassin wanted in connection to an assassination target against former and current public officials, such as those involved in former President Trump's administration. The FBI field office in Miami is sharing a wanted notice for a man named Majid Dostjani Farhani. Majid Dostjani Farhani. Kind of rhymes.
You got the second
Thank
time.
You. Thank you very much. He is an Iranian intelligence officer wanted
Iranian.
For questioning.
Iranian.
Iranian intelligence officer wanted for questioning in connection with the recruitment of individuals for various operations in the United States to apparently include lethal targeting of current and former United States government officials for all to be done, apparently, in revenge for the killing of a commander, Qasem Soleimani.
Yeah, Soleimani, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's what's happening, and the FBI in Miami has put out, I guess,
well,
today...
they have to take it seriously. It doesn't matter mm-hmm. your politics. They have to take this seriously, and they have to investigate yeah. it, regardless of who it is.
So there we have it. That's the breaking news that we have today.
Mm. We live in a crazy world. Speaking of crazy...
Kanye.
Now, I try to keep him out of this show, but Kim, you put this in, and I think it's worth doing.
So Kanye West,
look at this loser.
Is he known as Ye still? I don't know.
Who cares?
He wanted really, really, really badly to sample the song "I Feel Love" by Donna Summer, right?
Okay.
I feel love, right? You know that one?
No.
Okay. Well, he wanted.
I mean, I know Donna Summer, but I don't know.
He wanted to use the song badly.
Okay.
And so he asked Donna Summer's widower and the executive, whoever owns her music, right. Can I use it? And he was told, no, you cannot use it. And then he went to Universal Music Group and said, can I use it? Denied twice. In the face of repeated denials, according to the lawsuit, West and co-defendants attempted to get around this roadblock by instead making an unauthorized interpolation. What they did is they used the song's melody as the hook for their infringing song and essentially re-recorded almost verbatim key, instantly recognizable portions of I Feel Love using a singer sound-alike to Donna Summer with slight changes to the lyrics, also done without permission. The folks involved, Kanye West and Ty Dolla $ign, haven't commented on the lawsuit. But can you imagine? You're told no by the family.
It's documented.
You're told no.
This is one of those cases where you could argue it if it was very similar, right? But here you have documentation.
You're told
no. You have documentation that you wanted that song so that you know that it's what you're doing, right?
No by the family. No by Universal. And then you go ahead and you make the song, tweak it a little bit, but use the same melody, same everything to try to get around it. Sued,
I'm
going to
take that image down just because he has
big,
big
lawsuit.
He has such a punchable mm-hmm. face. I'm not a violent yeah. person, but he's so
You can't do
and
that. And to think that you could is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to tell you something.
Yeah.
When Julia was born, she's this little dimple right above her butt. I know, too much information to share probably, but my husband has always told her, it's the cutest little thing. My husband has always told her that's where you had a tail. You were born with a tail and we had to have it removed when you were born. Totally not true.
Right.
But next story reminds me of that.
Hopefully she's not watching this show. Otherwise she's yeah. going to be like, Mom,
do you really have to say it?
You're so embarrassing, Mom.
Oh my God, she's adorable.
Our ancient animal ancestors had tails, but why don't we? Right? Is that a good question? I think that's a good question. Somewhere around 20 million or 25 million years ago, when apes diverged from monkeys, our branch of the tree of life shed its tail. From Darwin's time, scientists have wondered why and how. Now researchers have identified at least one of the key genetic tweaks that led to the change. We found a single mutation in a very important gene, said this geneticist at the Broad Institute and co-author of a study published Wednesday in the journal Nature. That's a really good one. Mm-hmm. The researchers compared the genomes of 6 species of apes, including humans, and 15 species of monkeys with tails to pinpoint key differences between the groups. Once they identified a significant mutation, they tested their theory by using gene editing tools such as CRISPR to tweak the same spot in mouse embryos. Oh. Those mice were born without tails. They cautioned that other genetic changes may also play a role in losing tails. Another mystery: did having no tails actually help these ape ancestors?
Wait, I have a question. Humans, I know we're not supposed to ask questions, but...
Can I get to the end of the sentence?
Oh, okay, if you must.
Did having no tails actually help these ape ancestors and eventually humans survive? Or was it just a chance mutation in a population that thrived for other reasons?
If you're jacking something differently up with CRISPR, are they at all worried about... well, if I change something over here, then something over here might be changed. Like, is that a worry or not? Should they really be messing around with tails on animals? I'm just a question.
Well, they're going to be using this technology to help with, like, sickle cell and all these...
And they already are,
mutations. Yeah. So, I mean, this is the new technology. It's going to be used regardless. I think the argument is, it's like, if it's not being used here responsibly, it's going to be used in China anyway, mm-hmm. you know, and they'll probably release another virus, you know, from some lab.
Lord.
But, you know, if they can find discoveries, they have this controlled. It's, you know, it's in a lab environment and they're dealing with mice. I mean, I don't know. I don't think that's that big of a deal. It could be random chance, but it could have brought a big evolutionary advantage, according to this researcher who is not involved in the study. As to why having no tails may have helped, there are many tantalizing theories, including some link between taillessness to humans eventually learning to walk upright. Right. So an official at Smithsonian's Human Origins Project, who was not involved in the research, suggests being tailless may have been the first step towards some apes adopting a vertical body posture even before they left the trees. Not all apes live on the ground today. Orangutans and gibbons are tailless apes that still live in trees. But Potts, this researcher, notes that they move differently than monkeys, who scamper along the tops of branches using their tails for balance. Those apes hang below branches, swinging between them while hanging largely upright. And another biologist who was a co-author of the study said that losing our tails was clearly a major transition, but the only way to certainly know the reason would be to invent a time machine. And that hasn't happened yet, but I think scientists are working on that as well.
Jim says we lost our tails because we kept slamming them indoors.
Probably.
I love it. Lori, that's what my parents told me. There's a name for it. Something that doesn't close all the way during development or something like that. Yeah, it's funny. Wes says, I always wondered why English bulldogs and other related dogs have such short, stubby tails and other breeds have longer, normal ones. Interesting. Yeah. Also, John says having no tails makes it easier to make pants for us. So that's nice.
That's true. Yeah. Although this is San Francisco. I've seen people with tails.
I'm sure you have.
Yep.
So imagine in San Francisco, you're out at the Cow Palace where you've got to go take the bar exam, right? Hard exam. A lot of people don't pass it. But in the Cow Palace, while you're taking the bar exam, it's cold. And I mean, so cold, your finger, you know that cold where your fingers can't move right? You know, they get stiff and chilly and you have a hard time. After 3 years of law school, months of preparation, hundreds of people were inside the Cow Palace on day 2 of the attorney licensing exam. One of the people taking the test said, "You are under so much stress when you're taking this test. Add to the stress the unexpected cold temperature at the event center. Some people reported it was 54 degrees inside. They have heat lamps, but they only help depending on where you're sitting because it's a huge auditorium type of room. So if you're seated closer to a lamp up above, maybe you feel some of the warmth, but in the center, it is really, really chilly. And they have to be there for a long time, 6.5 hours on one day, 6 more hours on the second day. And people out during the break were running outside to stand in the sun and warm up. They said it was so bad, this unheated place of what appears to be a former barn, that some people were shivering in the middle of the test. So some people ran out during the break to hop in their car and turn on the heater to, you know, make their fingers work again. So cold. Somebody had blue fingernails. They said it's hard to concentrate when it's that cold.
Jim says the opposite.
The cold helps you concentrate?
A little bit of cold.
I think
a little bit of cold will keep you alert.
A little bit of cold.
In a studio,
but not
especially.
That cold,
A lot of talk show hosts kept the studio a little cool. Ron Owens kept the studio a little cold.
Yeah. And that's fine, but not so cold that your teeth are chattering.
Right. And for the record, only I'm pointing this out because San Francisco gets dumped on so much, the Cal Palace is not in San Francisco. It's in Daly City.
Daly City.
So let's dump
on
Daly City for once.
Yeah. So they say. In Daly City, the State Bar moved the test from the Oakland Convention Center to the Cow Palace to save money and consolidate testing locations. But it costs $2,000 or more to take this test, plus about that much for the courses that you need to, like, prepare for the test, right? And they can't even give you any heat? Come on now.
Not an easy test. My sister passed it on the first try.
Oh, look at her go. Nice
job. She also passed the ethics test immediately, and I said, okay, you're disqualified. You have to take an ethics test before you take the bar.
Oh, is that one easier to pass?
Not for everybody.
They said it's not really conditions you would expect of any type of professional environment. In addition to the fact that it's the most important test that they're probably ever going to take, that they're spending thousands of dollars to take it. A staff member at the Cow Palace said they've made some changes to temperature after multiple complaints and that it felt a little bit warmer the next day after the media covered this. But they said 3 more hours to go and hopefully it's all behind us.
Mama Daytree Boy pointing out that this is normal Daly City weather, so, and that is true.
It is, but you would expect if you're going to take the bar exam that it's at least like something that you can live with.
Yeah, you need to have standards. That weather is why my mom forced my dad to move us to the North Bay.
Yeah,
because we lived in Daly
City. Foggy and chilly.
Speaking of a lack of ethics, the Catholic Church.
Oh.
A group of priests caught joking about the Pope dying on their YouTube channel.
Oh, no. Really?
Oh, no. Look at that guy's face. He's like, uh-oh, I got caught. A bishop rebuked comments made by priests on their YouTube channel after they were praying for Pope Francis to die as soon as possible.
Seriously?
Archbishop Francisco Chavez of Toledo posted a statement on the Archdiocese website saying it rejected the comments and warned that it may take corrective measures without elaborating. The statement followed an episode of a program on YouTube called The Sacristy of the Vendee. You know that show, right?
Oh, yeah.
A counter-revolutionary priestly gathering, which happened earlier this month or last month. In it, a Toledo priest made an introductory salute saying, "I also pray a lot for the Pope so that he can go to heaven as soon as possible." Another priest expressed his support for this, while the conversation group, which involved 6 Spanish-speaking priests from different countries, laughed over the comments. The group then went on to discuss different religious, social, and political issues, mostly from a conservative point of view. That's what's going on here, because this pope is probably, I think he's the most liberal pope we've probably ever had, right, in the history of the church.
Yeah, but you don't joke about the pope. I mean, he's the closest thing to God, right? Like, in their religion.
Yeah, allegedly. In his statement, Chavez says he expresses his profound rejection of any manifestation of disaffection towards the person and ministry of the Holy Father, adding that it told the priest that they should seek forgiveness. The statement says that the archbishop is not responsible for or represented by the statements made by the priests on the internet program. Talk about damage control, right? Wow. In messages posted to the X platform, well, that's your first problem. The sacristy of the Vendee group apologized. "We're sorry for the unfortunate comment," said in a humorous tone about praying for the Pope to go to heaven as soon as possible. "It was in bad taste, although it does not express wishes for the death of the Pope, as some in the media have maliciously spread. We understand that it could be understood that way." Of course, because that's what you said. And I don't know if you heard that the Pope had been suffering from influenza. You know, he made a brief trip to the hospital for medical checks.
He wasn't doing well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's 87 years old, but that's not cool.
So we had Lori saying that she thought there might be some movement on the Eagle Cam. So I logged back over there to check it out, and it looks like maybe there was some movement. You saw the eggs earlier, but at this point, I just see the eagle still sitting on the egg. So I don't see anything has really changed in this.
By movement, do we mean like shifting her butt onto the eggs?
No, she's been moving a little bit and she's shifting around. Yeah. But I haven't seen any eaglets yet.
Right.
So, but we're going to keep watching it. Thank you, Lori, for letting us know. But I don't see any little eagle babies. She's looking around up there.
Yeah. No eagle babies.
So far, no eagle babies. So, yeah. But I had to go back and check just in case.
Do you want to do one more story?
Let's do one more story. Let's talk about, let's see if I can find my place. Let's talk about
best money management.
Best money management. This is the states where people are doing the best managing their finances. And not all states are equal in this. Some Americans are better at handling money stuff than other people. In order to determine where people have the best financial skills and where they need to improve, WalletHub looked at more than 2,500 cities, and they looked at 10 key metrics of money management, right? They looked at your credit score, average number of late payments in the last year, mortgage debt to income ratio, and they ranked each city in several categories. But money management by city, the highest ranking money managers are in Cupertino, California. They're doing really well. They rank 99%. Median credit score in Cupertino is 776. The credit card to debt to income ratio is 1.5%. The mortgage debt to income ratio is pretty high. It's 390%. But you know what? Houses are expensive there. Anyway,
there's a lot of Apple employees and a lot of tech people. They're doing pretty well.
They're doing pretty well, which is why number two is Los Altos. Same, right?
Right.
Number three is Lexington, Massachusetts. Number four is Palo Alto. Number five, they're doing pretty well in Chevy Chase, Maryland with money management. Number six, Sunnyvale, California. Number seven, Saratoga. Eight is Scarsdale, New York. Nine is McLean, Virginia. And 10 is Mountain View, California. And of course, 11 is Redmond, Washington, where Microsoft is based as well.
Affluent neighborhoods.
Other Bay Area cities that make the list, Foster City at 15, Pleasanton at 16.
Affluent.
Santa Clara, 18. San Carlos, affluent. 19.
Affluent. Yeah.
Well, it's fine.
You see a pattern here?
It is what it is. So they rank them, though, by median credit score. And did you know? I thought it was funny. The median credit score, as far as the highest credit score, is Fairhope, Alabama, McKees Rocks, Pennsylvania, and number three is The Villages, Florida. They've got a high credit score in The Villages.
Now they have money to spend.
I guess they do.
They have pills to buy.
They have pills to buy. They have things to do. Yeah. Anyway, it's kind of interesting. When you talk about ranking by city size, best money managers for large cities, San Francisco, followed by Seattle, Irvine, San Jose, and Boston. So there are a lot of people out there that are doing it right.
Yeah. William saying that his credit score is 819. You know, what's funny is
my
credit score has been hovering around. It has been and hovered around 810 for the longest time. I think I'm higher right now, but for the longest time, my credit score was 810.
It's interesting is that you know what it is, because I don't know what mine is unless I try to buy something. I pay my bills.
It's mentioned on the news every year. You can get a free credit report. Every year, and you got to keep on your credit, make sure that nobody's stealing your identity.
I guess so. Maybe today I should.
We'll come to after hours, and then we'll talk about this. Everyone can go get your credit score, and maybe we'll talk. Maybe we can talk about it tomorrow.
Oh, Karen's is 830. What's the highest you can have?
They changed the scale, and there's multiple scales now. It used to be just FICO, but now there's like different FICOs, and then there's like Advantage Score. So some of the ranges are going higher now. I think it's 850 on most of them.
Heather's kicking it with 838. Look at you.
Yeah. Mine went up a little. I think I'm in the 820s right now.
Karen says highest is 850. Wow.
Well, because it said one of my lowest category on my credit is length of credit, like the length that your account's been open. I'm like, well, yeah. I can't go
can't
any longer
because
I opened it like when I was a freshman in college. So that's my
and
biggest.
And still you get dinged for that?
Well, because it's only, 20 years. And
so
you know, if you have
the older you are, the better.
Yeah, they have ranges.
Have.
They say if you have 30 or 40 years of credit history, then it would go up. So that's the only thing keeping me down right now.
Interesting. Yeah. All right.
Well, that's it. We have people to thank.
Yes, we do. We have so many people to thank, including Wes, who jumped in with a $5 super sticker, and Luis, who also jumped in with a $5 super sticker.
Are you driving again?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Back off. I won't drive. Thank you both for
thank
that.
You,
really,
Wes.
Really
thank
appreciate
you, Luis.
It.
And who are our regular contributors?
We have our regular contributors that we're so grateful for, including Joyce M, Janet R, Nancy V, Jim S, Donald S, Vincent V, and Ricky F. Thank you truly to all of you for supporting the After Party Live.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it, Kim.
That's all we got.
I'll see you tomorrow here on the After Party Live at 105 Pacific, give or take.
Have a great rest of your Monday, everybody. We'll see you right back here tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.